Welcome to Happy Hour at Home, a podcast about friends navigating adult life in the modern world. I'm your host, Chloe, and today we're talking about couples therapy. Christina was born and raised in Little Saigon in Southern California. She graduated from Columbia University in 2017 with a degree in operations research, then moved to Vietnam to reconnect with her roots. She's lived in Southeast Asia, Europe, and the US in the last 3.5 years and loves to cook, read, and curate her wardrobe. Christina is currently based in Chicago and is a product analyst supporting Uber's growing freight business. Welcome, Christina!
Yo, hey.
Dude, welcome to Happy Hour at Home.
Yeah.
For all Happy Hour at Homes, we always start off with a drink because it's time to just chill and casually talk. Christina, what kind of drink did you bring today?
I have a gin tonic with Saint Germain and some cucumber slices. I really classed it up today for you, Chloe.
Oh, thank you. All right. Yeah, I am just really tired, so I just have like a blue bottle cold brew with milk.
Oh, what? If I knew that like alcohol was not required for this, I would have gotten something else.
Oh, it's definitely not required. I rarely have the alcohol. But thank you for going all the way for me.
Yeah, totally.
So just to give some context about who you are and how we know each other, you know, we've been friends for quite some time since college. We've taken lots of classes together, been in clubs together, and we've talked about all kinds of things in life until super late at night.
Yeah.
And we talked a lot about our relationships. And I think like it's been really neat to see us grow over the years because we have changed so much in the way that we develop and the way that we view our own selves and relationships. We talked about therapy. We talked about the future. So I just thought it would be super neat to get to understand your outlook on relationships, where you are, and thank you so much for being open to talking about this. I know it's really personal, but yeah. One of your greatest strengths is vulnerability, and aww. I think a lot of people would appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I'd love to hear a little about you. Like,
yeah.
How would you describe your relationship with your partner right now so we have people who get to know you guys?
Yeah. Actually, like while you were talking about that, I realized that we have been friends for 5 years now, Chloe. We've known each other for 5 years and we've definitely seen each other through like a lot of shit. But if I were to give like a very short intro to myself, I would say that I am someone who has always tried to follow her gut when it comes to what I do with work and also what I do with relationships. Mm. I went to college with like a really open mind about like what I wanted to study. And I've learned over time that it's just as good to know like what you don't like as well as like what you do like. Mm-hmm. All of that is like very important data to collect. My relationship with my boyfriend is actually quite similar because we've known each other for over a decade now. We were friends in high school. We started dating my junior year of college. It was like very, very messy. Like we were always like, I think like into each other, but then he had a girlfriend in high school. I had a boyfriend through like the first 2 years of college. And then like junior year, we were finally single. And I think that all the history that we've had means that like he knows so much about me. Mm-hmm. But in our relationship, I'm still learning like a lot of new things about him. We did long distance for like 3 years. Two of them in college. We took a big break my senior year of college. Then we were back on when I graduated and went to Vietnam. And then I moved to Chicago because I really wanted to try and make it work. And I also just happened to be able to find a job here. That's how we ended up living in Chicago. And about a year and a half ago, we decided to move in together. We're here now. We're out here.
You are out there.
Yeah, it's been a minute, and
it's been a long minute.
Yeah, we've been together for like almost 5 years now.
And your history with Noelle has been just so there have just been so many events, and you guys have gone through the thick and thin, and you guys mm-hmm. have made it, and you guys mm-hmm. worked through so many crazy experiences and situations.
Oh yeah,
which I think is truly admirable, very rare to encounter.
Thanks.
I guess, I don't know, I don't see that kind of resilience in a lot of modern relationships these days, because you kind of just like give up, find someone else, restart.
I mean, you feel like you have so many options.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely look to you guys as like a couple that has gone through that experience and knows like what it is at the deep end. And one thing that was really interesting when I was talking to you about was this whole thing about going to counseling together as a couple, couples counseling, couples mm-hmm. therapy. And you're one of the few couples that go do this. And I've only seen religious couples like go oh, through yeah. it so far. Tell me a little bit about like, how did the conversation begin?
Before I talk about this though, I really have to preface this by saying that like, it's highly personal for me to talk about this. Mm-hmm. So please be gentle with me, Chloe, and all other listeners. And also the reason why I think it's important to talk about is that with social media, with just this general modern ideal of relationships, people seem to think that like you should give up on a relationship if you ever like have hard times. And I think that because of that, there's so much like shame around struggling, shame around like the low points that you have in a relationship. It really resonates with me what you just said about how like you look to me and my experience as like, an example of a couple that's like gone through a lot and like has demonstrated resilience. I feel like nowadays, people don't value resilience. People value like perfection. Mm-hmm. We all want to be couples goals. I'm definitely not couples goals. I'm definitely not couples goals. But I would say that like I'm goals for me. Mm. Yeah. The type of person I try to be in my relationship and the practices that me and Noelle have put together, that's definitely couples goals to me. How we decided to go to couples therapy. Basically, like Noelle and I have been through a lot. We have been through a total of like almost like 2.5 years of long distance on and off. We had long distance for the majority of college because I was in New York and he was in LA. And then I was in Vietnam for 6 months, came back to Chicago. And then about a year later, I moved to Amsterdam for work. So we've done long distance like on and off for a good chunk of our relationship. And I think what that has done is that the in-person dynamics of our relationship, we're not super good at it. Like how you resolve conflict in person versus like over Skype is very, very different. And how you communicate when you're living independently versus like when you're living together is also really different. And I think when I came back from Amsterdam, we really struggled with that because this is like the first time in our 5 years of like a romantic relationship that like we were in the same place and there were like literally no plans coming up. Mm. I took that really seriously. The struggles we were facing, we didn't need to do it alone. There are professionals out there to help us. And I also recognize that the conflict and the struggle that we were feeling together and also like individually was something that was fixable. I really felt that like fundamentally, we wanted to make things work. I felt safe enough to bring up the concept of like...
So you sat down with Noelle, you talked about it, and then what was the next step?
If I was being totally honest, it was not like a big fight that like triggered us to go to couples therapy. Mm-hmm. It was just like the realization that like we didn't know how to resolve conflict yet. We knew there was like a pattern that we needed to break. Mm-hmm. When we officially decided, it took me actually several weeks before I actually took steps to do it. For some reason, I was like really scared of like trying to find a couples therapist. Like my immediate gut reaction was like, oh, I should just ask my individual therapist if she has a referral. When she gave me some referrals, I immediately reached out to like literally all of them. Like I reached out to everyone that she gave me on the list. The first one I was able to get like an appointment with, that's when we just went. And that was the first therapist that we worked with. We ended up sticking with her and not meeting with anyone else. But that didn't really work out. And we ended up terminating that relationship. what's like a nice way to say it?
I don't even know that you just terminate the relationship. Yeah.
Yeah.
If it's not a good fit, it's not a good fit.
With this therapist, we had, I think, like 4 or 5 sessions before I was like, ooh, I do not feel good about this.
This is like having 5 dates with someone and then telling them, hey buddy, we just
yeah, I'm not into it.
We don't click.
It's not me, it's actually you.
Wait, actually, why wasn't it a good fit if you're able to share? And then how did you transition?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. So you'll notice this when I'll say it a lot. Like I don't actually remember a lot about what me and Noelle fight about. I can only really pick out like 5 things, which tells me that the thing we're fighting about isn't actually that important. It's like the principle. It's like the feelings that come up because of it. So I don't remember what you're fighting about. at the time or like what was up for discussion. But I remember this. I remember she asked me, if you say this, like whatever I said, how do you think Noelle is going to respond? What other response could he give you? And I was like, whoa. We're like five sessions in. It's like too early for you to scold me like that.
Ew.
And then I just went silent for the rest of the session.
Uh-oh.
I think she felt it. Like she felt me immediately shut down because I felt like she had shamed me, basically. I think Noelle felt it too, because my partner, of course, he would feel me shut down. And then like at the end of the session, like she brought it up. She was like, hey, like I know we had an uncomfortable moment. And I was like, yeah, I feel attacked right now. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how I feel about it yet, but I'll think about it and maybe we can talk about it next session.
Wow.
So we left and it's kind of awkward. She asked me and I was really, really blunt with her about how she made me feel. The following week, me and Noel talked about it a lot, and I told him that I no longer felt safe being honest about how I felt or about the things that we said. The moment that I felt that, I was like, there's no coming back from this, I'm sorry. And Noel was really chill about it. We emailed her and told her that like we're not interested in any more sessions.
Was it just like a really simple, straightforward email?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I think she knew exactly why, too.
That's good. And so you know what a bad fit is. How do you know when a therapist is a good fit for you?
The next person that I was referred to by my therapist, we met with her for only like 30 minutes. It was just an intro session. And I immediately felt like she was what we were looking for. First of all, I chose her because of her background. She has a background in sex therapy.
Ooh.
Not that that's a thing that me and Noel like struggle with, just to be totally clear. It's not a thing we struggle with, but it's a thing that's highly important to the two of us. And because we don't struggle with it, it's something that we want to proactively nurture. So that's why I chose her. The other thing is that she listed on her profile that like she is someone who like studied under like Esther Perel. And I was like, oh my God.
No way. That's so sick.
Yeah.
I didn't even.
Yeah, I was like, oh my God, I want her.
Wait, did you ever ask her, like, what was it like working with Esther Perel?
No, okay. I was too scared.
You should.
But that was the thing where I was like, oh, I think, like, we might like each other.
Mm.
And she also said that she's a yoga instructor.
Okay.
And I have practiced, like, yoga and Pilates for pretty much, like, all my adult life. That like mindfulness about your body is really important to me and like my sense of self-awareness. So I thought she and I were an immediately good fit. What was kind of up in the air was like whether she and Noelle were a good fit. We met for 30 minutes. We liked her. But like me and Noelle like the majority of people after talking to them for 30 minutes. But then she proposed that we do individual sessions, each of us. So we would each meet individually with her. And I was like, oh, that's such a unique idea. And I think through the process, we each got to know her more personally as individuals. And then when we came back together in a couple of sessions, it was a lot easier to open up. There was like that rapport that was already there. And the fact that she took this care and she was aware enough about like how hesitant we were, it definitely made me trust her a lot more. She even like said in our first couple sessions together with me and Noel, that like she recognized that we were a really private couple, that we were very sensitive to each other and to ourselves, and that we would need like a very careful hand.
Was there anything that I don't know, like when you meet a therapist, anything that you're like kind of cautious of or like a yellow flag to you that you want to suss out?
Part of it is just sounds such BS, but it's literally vibes. Like it's the environment. The first therapist I wasn't a good fit for, she saw us in this like very barren office. There was like no windows and the couch was brown. The floor was brown. The chair she was on was brown. And I was like, it was just like not a very engaging environment. And it was just like sterile. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, no, exactly. My previous therapist had like a little like a Japanese stone water fountain thing. It was so nice. It was so cute. So beautiful.
Yeah. It's crazy that like those things make an effect on you, but it does. Whereas like my new therapist, their couches, but her couch is like royal blue and ours is like leather. Ew. And there's rugs and like there's a huge window and like you can see like the entire city. It's just like, I don't know. It's just better vibes. The environment definitely mattered to me. Matters to me a lot less now that like we're all virtual, but whatever. The other thing that I was concerned about was, to be totally frank, she is not a POC.
I see.
Yeah, she's not a POC or a person of color. I have historically always had therapists that are POC, and specifically people who are like at least like East Asian. Mm-hmm. I think because they relate a lot more to the cultural impact mm-hmm. of my background and how it colors like my experience as an adult. So I was really hesitant about that part, but she's shown a lot of respect for our different experiences, and she's also shown a lot of humility. Mm-hmm. And that's honestly what made me a lot more open.
Yeah, that's totally valid. And I think one time I was like shopping for therapists.
Shopping for therapists. What a way to put it.
Yeah. I just, you know, I look on psychologytoday.com and then look through all these websites and Yelp reviews, and then I get connected to these therapists.
Yeah.
And the first session's like sharing your life story kind of, so people like understand your family background. Mm-hmm. And for one reason or another, there was one therapy group that called like social services and like the police on me and my family. And it just was so horrifying for me because,
oh my God,
we're not like that. And so some people don't understand the family dynamics, and actually calling these people over to the household will break the household.
That's so traumatic.
I didn't have a choice. They're like, what's your address? What's your family's address? And I'm like, I'm not going to share that with you. And then I had to call my mom right away. And then my mom was going through a lot at the time. Mm-hmm. And then she like took it out on me. And then I broke mm-hmm. down. And it was like weeks of crying. And then they finally came. Everything was fine. But like that anxiety, just because a therapist, like a young therapist, was trained to follow some sort of protocol if they hear a certain buzzwords. I'm like, dude, you need to read the room. You need to understand what actually is happening and what the implications of what you're doing. Yeah.
My therapist is Korean.
Nice.
I think I can say that, right? Like, that's not like super identifying info.
I think so.
But my therapist is a fellow East Asian woman. It took me a long time to build up trust. I have seen her for literally 3 years. When I was in Amsterdam, we did telehealth.
Nice.
Whenever I'm home for like winter break, I still call it winter break. Oh my God. Whenever I'm home for Christmas, we still like have sessions. It's taken me years to open up. Yeah. It's only like fairly recently that I've started to be like really blunt with her about like the type of environment that I grew up in, the like urges and like feelings and like scary stuff that like sometimes I'm thinking about because of work that I really need to do. She's really surprised me because one, she has empathized with so much of it. Like, she'll even share her own personal experience. I'm like, what the frick? Why are you telling me this? I feel simultaneously exposed and also honored.
Mixed feelings.
I know, mixed feelings. And then like, second of all, I'm so shocked. It's such a transformative experience, I think, as someone who has gone through something really traumatic to not only get the validation, but also the acceptance of your experience. That's so important. I'm so sorry that happened to you. Like, that's literally the worst thing I have ever heard a therapist do. Literally the worst thing I've ever heard a therapist do.
Awful.
Would have chewed them out. I would have gone back for a session just to face-to-face, like, have a confrontation. Because, like, I don't have the self-control to not do that.
And the only reason why I chose them was that they were cheaper because they were like newer. Mm-hmm. The services are cheaper and therapy in the Bay is so expensive and they had to be in network to get coverage. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't know how to finance everything. But it's okay. I want to get us back to couples therapy. I think individual therapy is really cool. Couples therapy is like next level. There's so many different people to work things through with.
Oh, yeah.
And I want to go into couples therapy eventually. Hmm. But for now, I'd love to hear your experiences. Like, what did you expect out of going into couples therapy? And then what actually happened in your reality? What did you actually get out of it?
I think I talked before about like what triggered us going to therapy was just realizing that it was tough to like transition from being long distance on and off for years and then like living together. But on top of that, it was just the realization that we don't know how to like talk about the subject of marriage. No one teaches you that in school.
Unless you go to church.
Unless you go to church. And I went to church and I still don't really get it.
Oh, you did?
Mm-hmm. Like, my whole family is like really, really Catholic. And I grew up going to church like every single Sunday. And I still don't know how to talk about the concept of marriage. I had a like weird childhood. I had a tough childhood for sure, but I was very blessed. I was very privileged, and I had parents that very obviously loved each other a lot. So it's not like I'm short on like good examples to look at. And I still like struggle with this. I thought that a therapist would help me figure out like, these are the criteria, these are the topics of conversation you need to have in order to decide whether or not you are compatible for a lifelong partnership that is unlikely to fail. That's what I thought I was going to get out of it. That's not really what I got. That's not really what I got. What I learned is that there isn't a checklist that I could just go down with Noelle. You know that like New York Times article, it's like 20 questions to like fall in love or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
A question like 20 questions to decide if you're going to get married. Like that's not a thing, but there are lists like that out there. It's more like you have to decide with your partner what kind of marriage you want to have. Not all of them are the same. And also trying to understand like where your boundaries are and what your values are as individuals and as couple and as a couple.
Yeah.
That's what I'm currently working through. And that's actually so much harder than a list. I wish there was like a list that's like prescribed topics of conversation that we just need to get through, but there isn't. I still struggle with that right now. Like I struggle with how couples therapy can lack structure because there is no rubric and there is no guide for how you decide whether or not you want to get married. But I do think that figuring out what your boundaries are and like figuring out what your values are as a couple and as individuals is a really good start.
How are you both strategic in the way that you want to approach therapy together? And how did you communicate that, those goals with your therapist? And how did the therapist also help you structure it week by week or figure out how to get the most out of this investment?
When we're struggling as a couple, if we're fighting, we always talk about it in therapy. But our therapist does such a good job of like not focusing too much on the situation, but like helping us take a huge step back and figure out like, what is it that you're really fighting about? What are like the values that are at stake here? And like, how does that make you feel? And how can you recognize how you feel and like find ways to work on a solution together? When I'm talking about a solution, I'm not talking about like a, we have this problem, like how to get the groceries indoors.
Consulting.
Yeah. And then like, no, me and Noelle together with a therapist figure out how to get the groceries in the door. I don't know. It's more like, how can you recognize that you're feeling activated and how can you work together to like communicate that, support each other? Because the thing is that like feelings are really temporary. That's true. But sometimes when you're feeling them, it's really hard to resist the urge to like lash out or isolate yourself or behave in a way that's like not kind to your partner. Recognizing that like you're feeling that way, that you want to do that and like stopping yourself from doing that is really hard. That's honestly how therapy is structured for us. We basically go through cases, really tough situations that we've experienced together. Mm-hmm. And we talk about strategies to communicate better. We go even one step deeper and talk about like, why do we react this way?
And it brings out a lot of things that we don't really know ourselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what were some things that you were, what were you most afraid of in this process?
I think I was really afraid that I would find a deal breaker, that I would find something about Noelle that I just could not live with. I would find something about myself that I just couldn't find compromises for. I was afraid I would find the hill that I wanted to freaking die on, that it would cause us to break up. That's honestly the scariest part of couples therapy.
Yeah.
And I think of being in a couple in general, like if you've been together long enough, you know the majority of things about each other, the majority of like superficial stuff. What you're waiting for is like philosophical different and like deep convictions that you cannot compromise on. I haven't found that. I've had a lot of moments where I thought I did, but I haven't found that. And I think that that's very much thanks to my therapist and not as much of a reflection of me and Noelle as a couple.
Have you brought up this fear with your therapist?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think for me, I have a hard time figuring out which is a fight worth having. And I think it really comes down to the fact that I actually don't fully know what my like system of values is. I think it's because like I'm just very prone to feeling sensitive. I'm just a sensitive person and I'm very prone to feeling attacked or feeling afraid of being attacked.
Yeah.
And that turns like every conflict, every like little thing into like a huge thing in my head. because I don't know if I really care about it. I just assume all of this matters and I have to fight for what I want because that's how I would normally behave as a single person. Navigating that as a couple is really hard because I don't get to have like only my values taken into account. I have to think about Noelle now too.
Yeah, I think that it helps you figure out your own system of values, and that's actually a really difficult thing to delineate. Mm-hmm. What does that even look like? And then work that out with your partner's system of values, and then have a common language to communicate with two different systems of values, like two systems communicating with each other for life when things are not on the same page.
Yeah. And also those values change.
Yeah.
They change constantly. They change depending on like where you are in your stage of life. They change even based off of like what job you have or where in the world you live or what your family situation is. Like my system of values would change drastically if like my mom got sick or something. I'd be like, okay, bye y'all. Like I'm not here anymore. See you later. I'm not working. I'm gonna go hang out with my mom. That's what makes it so hard to find out if this is a person that you want to spend the rest of your life with. Sometimes you don't know until like you've been in serious crisis together. Also apart. Quarantine has been a high growth period for me and Noelle.
It's a good way to put it. What is a value that you have grown to learn about yourself? And then what's a value that you have learned that Noelle has that stuck out to you?
I'll start with Noelle because it's honestly like the easiest one for me, which is I always knew that Noelle is very introverted. I always knew that he took a lot of energy from being alone.
Yes.
It did not sink in until we lived together. And I know now that when he needs space, he actually needs space. When I try to interact with him, when he needs time alone, when he's expressly said, I need time alone, and I interact with him, I am setting him up for failure. Like, I need to trust him when he says that, like, I need time to recharge. And I know that seems obvious. I know that seems like, duh, like, of course you should do that. But for me, a person who's like really, really, really emotionally needy, it's really hard to practice.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. 100%. I guess I haven't introduced him, but when my boyfriend needs his alone time with the boys to play video games, I like don't get it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, how come you can't hang out with me this weekend, all weekend?
Yeah. What if we just play together? Like, why don't you want to play with me and your friends?
Yeah.
Or like, what if I just sit there and watch? Can I watch? Like, he doesn't want me there. Something that he has learned about me that I know he finds really irritating, but I'm like, I think he personally still struggles with is, I think this comes from like growing up with immigrant parents, but I generally don't listen to rules.
Explain.
When I was a kid, if someone told my mom, like, don't take shells from the beach, no one's going to enforce that. So my mom's going to take shells from the beach. I'm kind of like that too.
I know what you mean.
If rules are not enforced and if they don't make like, if the values don't align with mine, I generally am like, whatever. And the ways that this annoys Noelle is like, when he tells me no, what I hear is not right now, or I can be convinced. Does that make sense? Like, are you like that too? Like,
that's so...
It's very me. When someone tells me no, I'm not discouraged in the slightest. My immediate thought is like, they're saying no because they don't understand or because the circumstances aren't right. But if I wait, if I solve something, if I do something differently, they're going to say yes. And that really bothers him because Noelle is a rule follower and he is very, very strict about that.
I kind of relate to it. I kind of don't. My parents are definitely rule followers. Sometimes sometimes it's like a little shady, uh-huh, things that they do. Because, you know, some immigrant parents are like very degaff about certain things. They're like, mm-hmm, yeah, whatever, they do this in Asia. So like, why can't we do it here?
Yeah.
You guys have different sets of values, which can cause friction for anyone. Mm-hmm. The next step is like, when they do clash, what do you do? I don't know if you're able to share like a time when you just had one of the most difficult conversations or things to work through with Noelle during therapy. What was that like?
I can talk about one that actually happened this week.
Oh, wow.
And it's pretty innocuous and I think very quarantine related. Basically, I've really struggled with quarantine, mm-hmm, because I think that most of my coping mechanisms come from seeing friends and taking workout classes. Having all those taken away and not even being able to plan for a time when those are going to come back makes me feel really hopeless. I think that the way that me and Noelle cope with that is really, really different. Noelle is really accepting of the situation. He's like, okay, so this is the situation. It's okay now. And we will check back in when there's new information to see if it improves. And that doesn't bother him nearly as much as it bothers me. I need to plan things to feel better. And this week I was trying to plan like a trip for us to take. And I was trying to figure out like, where could we go in the Midwest that is safe? And the best I could find is 7.5 hours away driving. So 15 hours total for a Labor Day weekend. It's only 3 days. That's not worth it. But I brought it up to Noel and I was like, hey, if we could take like more time off, like this might be worth it. And then I asked him, like, are you open to like taking time off? And he said, I don't really know, but I can ask about taking Friday off. And I was like, okay, cool. As soon as I heard Friday, I started thinking, what about Tuesday? This is a moment where like me trying to stretch the rules as much as possible really annoys him.
Yeah.
Noel is so sensitive to like how other people feel. He never wants to feel like he's bothering anybody. For me to ask him to go out of his way to ask his manager for Friday off when he has committed to like a big project at work that doesn't really give him lots of flexibility is a lot. And then for me to hear Friday then ask for Tuesday is a lot. It immediately like makes him feel like stressed out, makes him feel he's letting me down. And like in the moment he like snapped at me and he was like, I'm literally doing my best. I'm busy at work. I will ask. And it really hurt my feelings at the time. Like I was like, I don't understand. Like this is literally how I have always been. And Noel generally doesn't snap at me about it. So when he does, like it really hurts my feelings. For the next like 2 days, like I was just weepy and sad and mopey. And he was just like annoyed at me and like not very sympathetic. Because from his perspective, like he's doing his best. And from my perspective, like I'm also doing my best. Mm-hmm. This is a really good example of a time where we could have resolved it faster if we were more honest about our feelings. I know now that the reason why Noel felt really annoyed with me is that he is actually trying his best. And when I ask him multiple times for more and more, it feels like no matter what he gives, it's never enough for me. That's how it feels from his end. And then for me, like when he's not sympathetic to like how desperate I feel to have any plan, even if it's like 6 months or a year away, feeling like he doesn't get that and doesn't want to support me in that makes me feel really lonely. Mm-hmm. And I already feel so lonely in quarantine. So back to your question about like strategies, I really think that it's again like that self-awareness of knowing why you feel the way you feel and communicating that.
Yeah.
And also I think when you know why you feel the way you do, it's easier to cut through the BS and not get angry. I think if I had paused to think about why I was so confused about him like being annoyed at me, if I stopped for a second to realize like I just actually felt sad, I wouldn't have been so combative with him.
Yeah.
I think if he knew that like he just really wanted to please me and he felt pressured by me, if he expressed that, then I wouldn't have even read his anger as anger. I would have read it as like frustration.
Yeah, I think that's so hard because when you're angry and triggered, you're not in the right mindset to say the right things to get the right answers from the other person.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's only when like you're calm and you're out of it, you're not in like that physical state of intensity, then you're able to look back and be like, oh, well, here's what's actually was happening. Here's what I actually wanted. And here's what I hoped that I could have said.
Yeah. How do you know when you're feeling activated?
I think that's what individual therapy helped me get through. Like before, mm-hmm. whenever I felt like my heart racing and when all these thoughts are going through my head and I feel so victimized, the narrative in my head is like, I can't believe this person is doing this to me. And I would just always act upon it immediately. I have all this energy and I'm going to lash out and I'm going to project it and I'm going to fling it.
You want to win.
Yeah, like I'm taking it to battle. Like this is happening now.
Yeah. I so get that.
But individual therapy has helped me understand when I get triggered and how harmful my words can be. I think I went from like, it's you versus me to it's us versus the problem. And that took like years.
Yeah.
How do you guys operate when one or the other or both are triggered? How do you communicate during these times? How do you share both of your needs?
I know it when it's happening because I can feel it in my body. The logical adult Christina pretty much goes away once I've been triggered. It's just like not there anymore. And I really have to rely on like my physical instincts. So like you, I like my heart starts racing and like my face feels hot. I'm like sweating. And when I feel like that, I can usually sometimes definitely can't even say usually. Sometimes I can tell, and I can tell Noelle like, hey, I'm feeling really upset right now. I don't know if like this is something that we can talk about right now. If I don't have like the self-awareness to know that it's happening and that I'm starting to go down this path where it's not going to be pretty and it's not going to be productive, I basically really rely on Noelle to call me out and remind me of the things that we've like promised each other that we would do. So that's honestly how we keep each other in check. Ever since we've done therapy, I think in therapy, we talk to each other a lot about what we expect of each other in conflict, what we want our fights to look like. And if we can remind each other of that in the moment, it's easier to, for some reason for me, it's easier to practice because I know that there, this adult, calm Christina agreed to this before. So even though like child Christina is showing up right now, she's like really upset. If you remind me that adult Christina agreed to this and that she wants to do this,
yeah,
then like it's easier for me to actually do that. In terms of like recognizing Noel when he's triggered, I think that I don't have a great pulse on this yet. I'm not going to even act like I'm an expert.
It's okay.
But I know when he's in it because he basically shuts down and he goes to a place where he starts evaluating everything very logically. And like, we're no longer having an emotional conversation. He's just so hyper-focused on solving the problem itself and not addressing the feelings behind it, which is the opposite of how I want to solve problems.
Same.
I know, it's the opposite of how I want to do things. When he does that, I'm just like, this is not what I want. And like the thing he always says is like, I don't know what you want then. I don't know what you want from me. And I'm like, I don't know either.
Oh, you're kind of stuck.
I want something emotional, but he's not able to give it to me. And I don't even know what that emotional thing looks like. And I think just realizing that, like saying like, I don't know what I want from you, makes it easier to de-escalate too.
But when he shuts down, how does he share what his needs are?
Noel usually says, let's pause.
Let's take this offline.
Yeah, let's take this offline. I'll send you an email thread later. We can follow up next week. And like, oh my God, that's actually like something that I hated for the longest time. Like we would always bring it up in therapy. He'd always say like, I think we should pause because I know that you're going to do something that you regret. You're going to say something, you're going to behave in a way that's not you and you're going to, and it's just going to be bad. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, but I don't know what else to do. What our therapist helped us just realize is that the reason why I don't like space is because I don't know when it ends. And I'm very bad at being optimistic, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
If he says, let's pause, it's really important for me to hear him say, still love you, just feeling kind of mad. And let's talk about this tomorrow after work.
Yeah.
And also when I see him like shutting down, sometimes I will also say like, yeah, let's talk about this later because we're not going to go anywhere with this right now.
You're the one who introduced these terms to me last time we talked, but women are the pursuer while men are the avoider. They kind of need their own space. They need to be in their own cave and they can't have you there. Whereas women like want to go after and solve it there and then. It seems like you're doing really well based on like you're able to be like, all right, if you need some space, then let's reschedule this.
Oh my God, no. If I'm being totally honest, I'm not that good at it. Like I said before, like I'm still learning that like space really means space.
Yes.
There's no interaction there. I think what I said before was like, I don't think it's gender specific. I don't think it's like men versus women. Mm-hmm. I think it's just like, there's a pattern of like having someone who pursues and someone who avoids. And for me and Noel, it just happens that I am the one who pursues and he's the one who avoids. And I honestly could not say that I'm super good at this yet because I still pursue him sometimes. If our de-escalation, our pause is too calm, I think, oh, it wasn't that bad. I can still pursue him.
I see.
I'll go into his office and then I'll be like, I'll like introduce something new, not even relevant to the fight, but something as mild as like, do you want to figure out what to get for dinner? And he just like, I can see him like losing his like sense of control.
Really?
Like I can see that I have entry at a time that he does not feel ready yet.
Damn.
Following what we have mutually agreed upon is still really hard for me.
And then how do you have an intermediary solution until the conversation happens while the space is needed? But like, you still have needs. It's a compromise. can't just be complete space.
Yeah. And I think that compromise is him saying, I need space, but still love you. We can talk tomorrow.
I see. Yes.
There's been like maybe like one or two times that Noel has done this successfully without me prompting him. Oh my God, isn't that so important for your partner to do something without you telling them to do it? Yeah.
Gold.
Sometimes I will tell him to do it though. Sometimes I'm feeling so sensitive that I'm like, I need you to reassure me that we're still fine. We're gonna figure this out. But the ideal is for him to like approach me while he's taking a break. Like for him to proactively reach out to me and tell me that, oh my God, it's like, I don't even care at that point if he needs to like take a week's worth of space. Whoa. I don't care if like he doesn't talk to me for like a week. I could not care less. That's enough.
So you're a verbal affirmation kind of person.
Oh yeah. Yeah. What are you?
Physical touch.
Yeah. I'm physical touch and verbal affirmation.
Yeah, same.
Noel cannot stand to like hug. Or, like, show physical affection when he's, like, feeling upset.
No.
So, like, verbal affirmation it is.
Christine. Yeah. We work with what we've got.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of interaction of, like, knowing what you need and knowing how to communicate and knowing it when you're at your 100% versus, like, at your 20%. Those are the kinds of interactions that take so much effort to build the muscles for. And I think it's a really positive outcome of therapy because you get to like be really intentional about knowing when it happens, how it happens, and what to do when that happens. What other maybe really positive experience came out of doing couples therapy with Noel that you probably wouldn't have experienced if you didn't do it?
I said before that I was afraid of finding a hill that I want to die on. What I realized is that there will always be conflicts, incompatibilities. There are moments where your wires are crossed and it's like not perfect. And your values will never align perfectly. That is a process. It's not like a obstacle that you're going to get past and you'll never interact with again. So what me and Noel have struggled with a lot is just like our different levels of engagement with like politics. I think that especially in the last few months due to like BLM and all of the protests that are happening, like literally only like a half a mile away from my apartment, it's been really top of mind for me, and it's caused me a lot of pain and also a lot of reflection. Most of the pain comes from the reflection and the realization that I've just been ignorant and not as great of an ally as I should aspire to be. It's always bothered me a lot. He's just someone who is pretty, not totally disengaged and not like totally uninformed, but it's just a thing that like he doesn't express a lot of emotion about.
Yeah.
Like I have so much pent up rage and frustration, enough for two people, honestly, so he doesn't need to do it. But like, it's really hard to like have a partner who just doesn't reflect that back to you. It's not a cup that he fills for me. It's a cup that many of my other friends do. And I don't know if it's a thing that I need from him, but it's a thing that bothers me. And we've talked about it in therapy only once.
Yeah.
And I think there's a big reason why I have never. This is a thing I'm afraid to talk about with him. And it's a thing that like we generally avoid talking about. And it's mostly because I'm super aware that I am extremely privileged. I am not a large 6'4" brown man with a beard. And that is what gives me pause for speaking about it with him. Knowing that the depth of my experience is very shallow when it comes to like inequality compared to like what Noel has probably experienced or what his family has experienced. Right after all of the riots in Chicago, we were in therapy together and I brought it up. I brought up how like it's a thing that frustrates me and I feel like I'm the only one who's angry and I feel like he doesn't even care. That's what I said. And then he said that like, it's not that I don't care. I care a lot. But I just don't see the point of being angry. And I was just like, what? Like, you know me. Christina. Like, I like literally don't relate at all. And I'm just like, how could you not be angry? He's like, I don't know. I'm just not. And then our therapist said something super interesting that's like stuck with me a lot. She said, like, have you ever thought that like maybe Noel doesn't let himself be angry because he's not allowed to? And I was like, no. And Noel is very chill. He's very even keeled. I've honestly only ever seen him angry outside of the context of me. Maybe like one or two times. He's just like not an angry person. And maybe that's a thing that I actually am very attracted to him for, because it really balances out the fact that I am full of rage at all times. And I think that recognizing that I have a lot of privilege around my own anger, that I'm allowed to be angry, even though there's like a bad stereotype about angry women. I think there's no threat of violence, for instance, if I'm angry. Noel, if he's angry, there's a decent chance something bad might happen to him. Whereas, like, no one's gonna hurt me because I'm angry and screaming. I think having someone point that out to me was so meaningful. And it meant so much because it's something that Noelle also just could not articulate. I remember, like, in therapy, my therapist turned to Noelle and she was like, "Does that fit for you?" And he's like, "I don't know." And then me and like my therapist were just like, "I think it fits." When your therapist can add like some dimension to your partner, it's like crazy. The things that Noel has said to me in therapy, he's never said to me like when we're home by ourselves. And that I don't think that means that like he doesn't trust me or doesn't love me. It's just that the environment is very specific. The like safety you feel in knowing that there is a trusted professional who is trained to moderate these very, very difficult conversations is there to help you express what you really feel and even like translate for you sometimes. I think that encourages both of us to say things we normally wouldn't say and talk about stuff that like we're usually, at least for, I don't know if it's true for him, but at least for me, like I'm too scared to bring it up because I'm afraid that I'll say something wrong or I'll do something that'll hurt him or I won't be able to say what I really mean and have him understand.
How do you and Noel keep each other accountable in between sessions?
There's one I've already talked about, which is like we know what we've agreed to in therapy. And if the other person isn't upholding themselves to those standards, isn't meeting those standards, and isn't like holding themselves accountable to it, the other person will. And like I think that Noel does it in a way that's like very non-confrontational. So like I'm usually able to pull myself back in line. And I think that's like a mutual feeling. But I think on top of that, like we also just sometimes check in during the week and we're like, what do you want to talk about next week in therapy?
Setting up the agenda.
We like really think about like we would definitely talk about like a very loose agenda. Or like sometimes like we'll be in the middle of like something that I can feel is escalating towards like a fight, but it's just like at the moment it's just a disagreement and I can feel that it's big enough that I don't want to fight about. This isn't something I want to fight him on. I want to maybe do this with a professional. Sometimes we'll be like, let's just talk about this in therapy later. We also read together a lot.
Same books?
Yes. Sometimes it's things like sci-fi. Like we've been reading, by the way, if you are into sci-fi and you're listening and you are part of a couple, I highly recommend Ted Chiang's like book of short stories. He has like 5 million. He is the author behind Arrival, the movie with Amy Adams. It's a book of short stories. So you only have to sit down. You can finish an entire short story in like about 30 minutes, but they're always really, really interesting. And almost all of them are like involve ethical problems. So like me and Noelle will always discuss like how it makes us feel and like what kind of like memories or thoughts that brings up in us. I love that so much. And we also like send each other articles that we read so that we could talk about it. Like we've lately been on a fire kick. Do you know what fire is?
No.
Financial independence, retire early.
Oh, I see, I see, I see.
And there are a lot of blogs about this, and I've been kind of into it because one of my very, very, very close mentors from work got me into it. We read like Wait But Why. Have you heard of that blog?
No.
It's basically a kind of nerdy scientific blog. He's like interviewed Elon Musk, but he's also like done a lot about how to optimize your life, basically. And me and Noel sometimes, Noel's really into it and I'm not, but I read it because he's into it and we talk about that. We do a lot of reading and discussing together. So even when we're not in therapy, we're trying to be really conscientious about like what our values are and exploring the other person's values to understand what they are.
That's cool.
Yeah, so we just do a lot of reading together.
Nice. Your own book club.
It is a mini book club with only two people.
Who's the president?
Me. But to be honest, like Noel does a lot more like technical reading, which is why I'm the president.
I wasn't in couples therapy, but I think to keep accountable, my previous partner and I would take walks around the park on Sundays and we call them shit walks. We bring all the shit. But we're in like in a nature setting or walking forward. It's like bright outside or not like in a dark room and being sad. And so I think that was really helpful to unraveling some things that we might have just let slide by, but still, you know, keep pented up inside.
Honestly, every couple is probably really, really different. The book club thing, I've actually stolen from like a friend of mine. It's not like something original for me. I think that so many of the coping mechanisms that me and Noel have as a couple are different from how we cope as individuals. Mm-hmm. Trying that stuff out and like collecting all the advice we can, also being creative with our own ideas, is how I stay really intentional in how I choose to problem solve with Noel.
When do you know when you're ready to stop couples therapy?
Noel and I have talked about this before. And we've said that like we don't really want to change therapists. So if we had to move or something, we would just try to do online telehealth. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to build that rapport with someone new. It's really hard to find a new therapist. Like, I don't want to do this again. Let's stick with her because she clearly works for us. The other thing we've talked about is like how frequently we go to therapy. When we first started, it was bi-weekly. And then we switched to weekly, and then we've just stayed at weekly ever since because it's been really, really productive. And we've said in the past, like, maybe we could switch to like monthly when we feel that our skills at conflict resolution and like our like vision for what kind of like partnership we want to have is more clear. But because we're missing those two things, like I would say that if I'm currently at 20% skill, and it requires like plus ultra effort to get to like 25%. Like that's where I'm at. I'm definitely not close to where I would like to be.
Yeah.
I don't think that I have a super clear idea of like what my values are yet, which is I think why we're not married yet or even like thinking about that yet. But I think when those two things are a lot better and more stable, Like what I mean by stable, like sometimes some weeks you feel like, oh, I understand everything about my partner. We're like so in sync. And like, I know exactly how to handle all conflict. Like sometimes that does happen. When that feeling is more stable, I think that's when we could switch to like a monthly cadence. But I don't think that there's a scenario where we would stop. Couples therapy is something that we definitely prioritize. And we definitely don't see it as like a handicap or like an indication of like our relationship struggling. It's more like, this is like a really great resource.
It's like going to the gym regularly for long term.
Yeah. Or it's like going to the doctor, you know, like you do a yearly physical. Mm-hmm. We do a weekly emotional check-in on our relationship because it's important to us.
It's a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
For people who are looking into a couple therapy, when would you recommend for couples who want to go into it, and how should they prepare for it? Are there any resources you can recommend or anything that you've done to help make this decision as informed as possible?
I think that if you want to do therapy with anyone, like even if it's like individual, regardless of whether or not it's couples therapy, you can do family therapy. It requires everyone in the room to be really, really highly vulnerable. Like for instance, I don't think that me and Noel had very productive sessions until maybe like 3 or 4 sessions in, possibly even longer than that, because I could feel that he was afraid to be super open. If you're a good fit with your therapist or couples therapist, you need to know how you feel. And you need to expose yourself to a little bit of risk, because the only way you know that someone is a good fit is when they show up in a way that's actually really healing to you when you're feeling vulnerable and scared. But I don't think there's like any stage in your relationship or stage in your life that like you need to do this. Again, like me and Noel, our relationship was not on the ropes when we started. There have definitely been like some wild up and downs in our relationship, but it was not on the ropes. And I think maybe that's one thing I could say, that it's a good time to go into couples therapy if you would just like to be a lot more intentional in your relationship. If you would like to really explore with your partner, like what kind of partnership you want to have.
That was Christina Nguyen, product analyst at Uber and a dear friend from college. I'd like to thank her for coming out and being so open about the conversations she and her partner has had when navigating their relationship. Couples therapy can oftentimes feel taboo, but it's actually a very healing experience. We hope that Christina's story can help people understand new modern ways to problem solve together as a couple. If you have your own stories or thoughts on relationships or couples therapy, write me at colorsofchloe@gmail.com or visit me at my new YouTube channel at Colors of Chloe. Thanks for listening and see you next time!